Okay, I hereby open the April meeting of the IASB. We welcome Gary Kamarek, our new board member from the United States. Gary, perhaps you would like to introduce yourself briefly to our audience.
Damn, Chris, your button.
That's okay. Push my button.
No. That's the first thing you have to learn.
Don't touch the
button. Push any buttons.
Okay. Anyways, good morning or good afternoon, depending on time zones. I'm Gary Kamarek. I joined the ISB last Monday. I'm absolutely delighted to be here. I've spent the last 10 years, in various forms of support to the organization, the AICPA, the FASB, and others, and it's the sort of work I really like. 28 years at Xerox, 13 as chief accounting officer, and almost 11 years at Pricewaterhouse prior to that. So almost my whole career has been inside theoretical accounting, preparer accounting, auditing, and similar skills. So glad to be here.
Gary has a lot of practical experience, a lot of technical knowledge, and he has also done some thinking on accounting. So I think you can use your knowledge and experience very well. Again, welcome. All right, Michelle, you're going to educate us on...
on the development of the
IFRS professor, please.
This is agenda paper 8A. At the last meeting, a few ISB members said that before making any decisions on the use of the IFRS for SMEs by publicly accountable entities, it would be useful to be provided with a clear analysis of the simplifications made from full IFRS at the time the IFRS for SMEs was developed. So I've done this in agenda paper 8A. I plan to give a brief introduction today and then to see if you have any questions on the paper or on the development of the standard. Now, the IFRS for SMEs has been developed for general purpose financial statements of non-publicly accountable entities. And the primary driver when making changes to full IFRS was the difference in the information needs between users of publicly accountable entities and non-publicly accountable entities, and also a cost-benefit analysis in relation to those needs. However, the IFRS for SMEs was also developed with the mindset that it would be an alternative option for non-publicly accountable entities, so those entities could still choose to use full IFRS. So, for example, non-publicly accountable entities that want comparability with listed entities, that want the use of complex options and have complex transactions, may still find that full IFRS suits their needs better than the IFRS for SMEs. So whilst the user needs of non-publicly accountable entities was the primary driver, the staff understanding is the ISB also considered that the IFRS for SMEs was intended more for those entities perhaps with limited resources to apply full IFRS, with less complex transactions, and also where comparability with the listed peers is less of a consideration. So for this reason, some of the complex options and also some of the guidance from full IFRS addressing complex transactions was omitted in the IFRS for SMEs. In actual fact, when this project was first started by the ISB, it was primarily intended to address the needs of smaller entities and also of emerging economies. So agenda paper 8A lists the main differences between the IFRS for SMEs and full IFRS. Note these are differences at the time the IFRS for SMEs was issued in 2009. So any changes to full IFRS since then will have not been included in the paper. So I think the main purpose of this education session is to see if you have any questions on the development of the standard. And also any points that have been raised in the agenda paper.
I have a question. I think I should know the answer, but I just don't know, or maybe don't remember. It's on the omitted topics, paragraph 17, and a comment which has note to the extent that assume an SME decides to have some form of segment reporting in addition, which is not required by IFRS for SMEs, but they just decide to produce some form of segment reporting. And they decide to do it in a way which is not compliant with IFRS 8. What's the outcome of that? Because you say they could provide such information, of course, nothing prevents, and they could refer to the full IFRS for guidance, but they don't have to when they decide to. So what's, is it a free territory they can invent or decide which form of segment reporting is appropriate to them without looking at IFRS 8? And the same for earnings per share or whatever interim. So,
essentially, they can use any basis because they haven't got to look to full IFRS, but there is an accounting policy hierarchy in Section 10. So when using any guidance from anywhere else, that they've got to ensure that it is in accordance with the accounting policy hierarchy and the guidance.
They have to explain. If they decide to not follow what is the highest level in the hierarchy, which is probably IFRS 8, I suppose, and then to do some adaptations or to move away, do they have to justify to disclose it? What's the outcome?
There are no specific requirements in those areas.
Is that something we will consider in the revisions to give more discipline in a way? If they decide to add something to the requirements, what should be the basis for doing so? And are we going to discuss it?
If there are some, just like the entities apply our standards, if there are some areas not covered by our big book, then the entity can provide information, you know, based on their judgment. And if we want to have a specific requirement, what does that mean?
Well, my point is that it's the brand name, it's protection of the brand name, including the brand name IFRS for SMEs. If an entity decides to go beyond the requirement of the SME standard and to add, which probably is good, some information on the segment reporting, I'm not saying we should impose that they follow the full IFRS requirement, but they should be transparent on why they opt out of the IFRS requirement for that purpose when we think that the best requirement, the best guidance is IFRS 8, for instance. So there should be a minimum disclosure of why the alternative solution, an alternative solution has been chosen. It's not to impose everything, but just to protect, in a way, the brand name IFRS here.
Daryl?
I think the answer, and I'm a little bit guessing what the board would have been thinking at the time, but a lot of people who started to use IFRS for SMEs haven't come there via IFRS. They've come there via local GAAP.
Yeah.
And so what they've done is that to the extent that they have chosen to disclose additional information over and above what IFRS for SMEs use, I think they very often would have used the local GAAP equivalent of, say, segment reporting. I think what we were trying to do then, and what I'd still be quite keen on us trying to do, is to discourage people, or not to force people to have to go to the big book every time they want to add additional disclosure. Because there are lots of elements, and even in full IFRS, there are lots of times when companies will choose to disclose something more than what's required in IFRS.
I think
you put a lot of pressure on them if you require them to then, every time they want to add something, first see whether that is covered in full IFRS, and then understand how full IFRS requires them to do it.
I think paragraph 60 and 61 of this paper spell out the current policy. It seems to me it's a relatively sensible policy.
We do require that if an entity makes such disclosures, then it does need to describe the basis for preparing and presenting the information.
I think this paper is very good for us to understand what the SME is and for us to manage these standards. But not only that, this provides very good hint for us to improve current IFRS. And one question is about paragraph 50, which is talking about cumulative exchange differences.
My paragraphs are not numbered right.
50?
50, sorry. 50. May I understand this is non-recycling for the IS21 type OCI?
Yeah.
So if you have a cumulative OCI on your book, and then you sold your foreign investment, and then that OCI will remain in the equity.
Yes.
And you don't have any segregation of equity, so just will it keep other than simply equity? So I don't know in detail.
It depends what the company is required to do. Under the local law, what kind of equity split it has.
Right.
But under the standard, we just have equity. But I think the basis was to avoid the entity having to track those exchange differences.
Right, right. So is there any other thoughts other than, just avoid tracking nuisance?
What do you mean by other thoughts?
So, because it's non-recycling on the IS21, and I think it may give us some hints for current discussion about conceptual framework. But if you have any discussion on this paragraph 50, so it could be a good hint for us.
I can definitely look back and see.
Right. Okay.
Simplification.
That's it. Only simplification.
Yeah, that was the only overriding.
Right. Okay.
Stephen?
I had a similar comment to Philippe's, actually. I wasn't focusing on segment reporting, but more earnings per share, because I feel that if there is nothing on earnings per share and somebody wants to calculate it, they do whatever share count they want, whatever method for calculating diluted earnings per share. It seems to me that if they were to present earnings per share, they ought to do it in accordance with IAS 33.
Non-listed companies.
Yeah, well, but that may or may not be the case in the future, of course. That was the same comment that I had as Philip.
Gary?
Let me begin by saying, Michelle, I thought all the position papers here were well-written, and pretty clearly articulated, the staff recommendations and my compliments. This question really is probably, it's a setup question for me as you're looking towards the question on 8B, but the definition of public accountability about where they're trading in a public market, when that was discussed, when IFRS for SMEs was developed, I mean, they're very thinly traded, and they're nominally public, but essentially, sitting in a trust department of a bank to be held to maturity, although technically publicly traded, but never happens. Was that considered when that was developed, or do you assume an active market and active trading? What was the thinking?
I'm not sure the term is actually used in full IFRS, the term public traded in a public market.
But I think your question, Gary, was in relation to SMEs, was it considered?
It was, yeah.
I think it was. I was part of the original committee way back. And I think the aim, again, was simplicity. I mean, the whole idea, and remember, too, that this public accountability is not mandatory. People can pick up, we're going to have a debate as to, how mandatory it is, but people can pick this up for whatever reason they want, which was partially Steve's point. Quoted entities. If you start going down that route of trying to define active trading or liquid markets or whatever else, and this was a relatively simple way of trying to get cut off. They also talked about size at the time, but when you're looking at the whole world, trying to determine a size for an SM was something they couldn't do either. So this was
the public, because there's some very large, closely held companies, in the world that this would seem to fit in if they chose to do it. And I would agree that defining as securities in the public market is a good, simple way to define it. I was just curious, but some are very thinly traded to the point of non-existent. Yeah. I was just curious of the thinking.
There was a Q&A issued by the SME implementation group, because we did receive quite a lot of requests for further guidance on that area. And so they have produced a non-mandatory Q&A, and as part of this review, we'll have to consider whether we want to adopt that guidance into the IFRS for SMEs.
Thank you.
Mary?
Michelle, thanks for reminding us of the request and the origin for this, because I found the paper helpful, educational for me, in terms of looking at the differences. And going back to the issue that you raised at the last meeting, if we are going to be, we were asked to consider whether or not we keep the prohibition on use of the standard by entities that have accountability. And I think we need to understand what simplifications were made by the board at the time in order to conclude whether or not it's appropriate to remove that, because I think if we remove that, regardless of what we say, we have to be conscious that it is giving local regulators the at least implicit permission to permit or require entities with public accountability to use the standard. So I think having something like this is quite important, and we should be open about what we are doing, and I think us maintaining a document like this that allows users of financial statements to have a high level overview of what the differences are, would be important if we were going to open up the use of the SME standard. So, and I think this strikes the right balance in terms of helping you to understand what the differences are without getting bogged down in detail. Mm-hmm. So very useful.
I must say, you have the treatment of goodwill, and it kills me. Yeah? Write it off in 10 years or shorter, and no annual impairment test, only when there are indications. It's nice and simple.
Mm-hmm.
Nice. It gets rid of the stuff in time.
Yeah. Oh. So let's go there.
Huh?
Yeah. Appreciate it enough, there will never be an impairment.
We'll revisit it. Okay. Let's move on to next paper.